I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have a lot to cover today, as we do every day. So first, I want to thank everybody for being here. I think the overriding theme today, we're going to try and stay away from being too heavy, but in this opening segment, I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of cooler heads prevailing. We obviously see we're in a situation where there's a great deal of violence going on, and we'll talk a little bit about what's going on out there. We also see we have boycotts going back and forth, which are legitimate. You know, people want to boycott something. That's a way to protest. There's no violence in there. And then we see anti-boycott protests going on. Specifically, I'm talking about the Goya food situation, where the president of Goya Foods, a gentleman, came out and said he supported President Trump and appreciated the things that Trump has done for the Hispanic community, which, of course, enraged everyone on the left that anyone would support President Trump. That has become the default position that it's now understood. He is a racist. He is a homophobe. He is a xenophobe. He is every bad thing you could be. And if you support him, you support all those things. That has become the, the general understanding, which we all know is really not true. That's the left flailing about as we get closer and closer to this year's election. Now, the polls continue to show Joe Biden in the lead. Does anybody out there actually believe Joe Biden is in the lead? I think if we go back to every election for the past, 25 years, we would see the Democrat candidate always in the lead until the day of the election. And then, surprise, surprise, people actually come out and pull the lever for the person that they want to vote. What I think I see going on behind the scenes, and this is all anecdotal, no doubt about it, you know, I try and talk to lots of different people to get lots of different opinions about what's going on. But I have to say that for the most part, people are saying very quietly, who else are you going to vote for besides Trump? You know, if you vote for Joe Biden and his economic plan that he revealed, even Goldman Sachs came out and said that will probably start another great recession, if not a depression. Joe Biden said he's going to double corporate taxes. There goes your jobs. He's going to regulate. He's going to defund the police. Every liberal wish list thing that's out there, Joe Biden has said he will support. So the opposite of that is President Trump. That's the only other choice people have. So I think when people go into the booth, they're going to push that button for Trump. I think it's going to be a close election. I hope it's a landslide, but it could be a close election. Not because Trump is the greatest guy in the world. How many times do you have to say that? But he is doing the right things as far as our economy and as far as supporting our country. Now, I found it pretty funny. You know, they painted the Black Lives Matter sign on the street right in front of Trump Tower. Now, Mayor de Blasio in New York is not a fan of Donald Trump. He's a left-wing, probably a communist, actually, is what he is. But he wanted to do that, to stick a finger in Trump's eye. Right in front of his building, we'll do that. Well, you know what? I don't think President Trump disagrees that Black Lives Matter, but I think he says all lives probably matter, which even you look how the left has twisted the culture in that anything other than saying Black Lives Matter is considered racist now. So when you say Blue Lives Matter or All Lives Matter, that's considered racist. People are being fired from their jobs for saying such things. It's amazing. But I think the bottom line is that Trump retaliated, and apparently on a building that he has access to or control over, I'm not sure. I saw this on social media. He had placed up a gigantic, like 200 by 200 foot MAGA poster right across the street from either City Hall or the mayor's mansion in New York as a get back. So it's interesting how this goes back and forth. All right, so the whole idea, my concept here is, will cooler heads prevail? Will we have enough people to realize how dangerous what's going on is, physically dangerous for all of us, but dangerous for our country, and decide to do something about it? So one of the first things that I saw is that there's starting to be some stories about the backlash to all of this violence. to the looting, to the rioting, to tearing down statues, to cancel culture, all of those kind of things. We're starting to see stories that there's a backlash, a quiet backlash, which is what makes me think that when people get into the booth, they're going to vote for safety and security, law and order. Kind of a repeat of like 1968. If you go back and look in your history books, there was a lot of upheaval in our country at that time. It was a major time of unrest and change, and it started to get out of control, and it was dangerous. We saw that the Democrat convention was overrun with violence, and I think most people realize that if they're not safe and secure, you can't live your life. And they went into the voting booth and they voted for Richard Nixon in overwhelming numbers. And I think that's the model people are looking at now. At least that's the general thought going on out there right now. You know, the consensus thought to those of us who are trying to figure out where this is going and why. Another thing that I did see was some individuals, some people who are standing up and speaking out. And I would guess they're doing it at their own peril, I guess, to some point with our cancel culture. Probably the most famous is basketball player and entrepreneur Michael Jordan. Now, Michael Jordan has always been a guy that's comported himself very well. He's been a decent ambassador for our country wherever he's gone. He was a tremendous superstar in sports, and he seems like a pretty decent guy. Well, the other day he came out with a social media post that said something along the lines of, I have to speak up. I can't be silent anymore. And his point was, as a country, we have got to address any grievances that people have legitimately. We have to look at them and say, if there's police brutality, if there's unfair policing practices, whatever, we absolutely have to look at that. I think everyone would agree with that. If there's something wrong going on, we have to look at it. Now, when you look at statistics really do not match the stories that are out there. You know, the general consensus that police are out of control, killing people and doing all this. But even if in instances where it does take place, we have to try and fix that. Nobody wants our police officers doing anything inappropriate. And if that means a cultural change, if that means training changes, if that means changing the things that they do. You know, St. Petersburg, Florida just came out with a new statement of what the police are going to be doing. The police there are no longer going to be responding to nonviolent calls for police service. They're not going to mental health cases. They're not going to drug overdoses. They're only going to go to violent crime responses, which is something we talked about here on Chasing Justice not too long ago. Maybe we want to change the things we have our police officers do. Now, I think it's going to be, in the long run, that's going to be problematic, because what I found, having a career in law enforcement, is that there are many instances when people have no one else to call, they call the police. They're not sure. There are a lot of concerns out there that a lot of cities are, you know, defunding their police, or actually they're redirecting some money from the police departments to other parts of their government, social service agencies. Okay, you could probably do something like that, but the reality is going to some of these calls where you have a person who is mentally unstable, violent, threatening violence, or have actually committed violence, and you're going to send social workers in there, what you're asking for is additional victims. Right? And that's why you have to send law enforcement to those kind of things. But a lot of cities, I think, are going to make that mistake now. They're going to think, oh, you know what? If people just talked nicely to everyone and tried to work out their problems, there'd be no violence. What people are missing is that the violence usually comes from the citizen directed at the police. And when the police respond, it is often a very negative situation for the person who started the violence. So we'll see how that's going to work out. But we could certainly change some of the things we have our police officers do. You know, another one, which everybody hates, no matter whether you support the police or not, is motor vehicle law enforcement, right? You're driving down the street and you have a taillight out. Cop stops you. Turns out you got something in your car you shouldn't have and you get locked up. Nobody likes that. Even decent citizens, you get pulled over and you get a ticket for having a taillight out. Now, the purpose of having taillights is so that we can all drive safe and everyone's car should be proper functioning order. But maybe we tell the cops the only time you're going to issue tickets is in a motor vehicle accident that you investigate where you can find fault. Everything else, we're just going to let it go. Right? I don't know. This way the cops won't be pulling over so many people. They won't have to do that part of the current job title of motor vehicle enforcement. Is that something we all want? Are we happy with people whose maybe cars are not inspected, not in safe shape, driving around? Is that going to cause more accidents and cause everyone else tragedy when there's car accidents? I don't know. Every action has a reaction. So if we cut back on the things we have our police officers do, then there's going to be a gap in that security net that we have developed across our country. But we'll see, because a lot of places are doing it. So Michael Jordan, the second part of what he said is, it was important. I thought it was a great voice, because he's a very well-respected man across the country, that if there's something wrong with what's going on with policing, we have to fix it. The second part of it is, we all have to get together and respect our police officers. Respect and support them. Now, this is really the message here of Chasing Justice, right? Isn't that what we've talked about for a long time? Of course, if something's wrong in our society, we fix it. We grow. We get enlightened. We figure out what was wrong. We change the paradigm. But that doesn't mean we don't support our police officers. If there are police officers who are a problem, then they should be removed. Nobody wants a bad cop out there. You know, there's a saying that nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop. Absolutely true. So, Michael Jordan, bravo to you. I hope that your voice, which is a powerful one, gains some support, because your message is really good. Fix what we need to fix and support our cops. Another one, there was an incident in New York City which really epitomized, I think, some of the complaints that the protesters have, and that maybe doesn't happen to everyone, but it certainly happens, according to what the protesters say, to many people in our African-American community. They are having people call the cops on them for no reason. They make up stories about what they do. And I can imagine that if that had happened to me, I'd be extremely frustrated and angry. I talked about that here one time. If my neighborhood was the neighborhood where every time my boys went out into the road, my sons were driving their car or doing whatever, they got pulled over and stopped and frisked, I'd be pretty frustrated with that too. Now, the caveat there, of course, is if I lived in a very high crime neighborhood, I would probably be a little more understanding of the fact that, hey, that's what the cops are doing out there trying to prevent violence. That being said, I can understand where people would be sick and tired of being stopped for no reason, just because they're in a neighborhood where there's lots of crime. So in New York City recently, there was a woman who's being called a Karen. You know, Karen is the woman who's always complaining, gets in your face about wearing your mask and, you know, make sure your dog walks here. Well, Karen was in the park, and there was a man there, Mr. Christian Cooper. Now, apparently, Mr. Cooper, who's African-American, was bird watching in the park. I like to watch the birds. I sit in my yard. I look at all the different kind of birds, so I kind of get it. He's bird watching in the park, and apparently this woman, this Karen, had a dog, but it wasn't on a leash. Now, a dog not on a leash could be danger to you, right? It's just not comfortable to have a dog running around that you don't know. So he said something to her. He said, hey, could you do me a favor, put that dog on the leash, or whatever their conversation was. That was the context. Could you put the dog on the leash? Well, she apparently, it's on video, she kind of lost her mind, and she called the police and started saying that she was being threatened by an African-American man. And now, obviously, she was using that as a way to get the police to respond, to take some action against this guy. Totally and completely inappropriate, right? So she's been arrested, and they've charged her with filing a false police report by making something up like that, because obviously Mr. Cooper was not threatening her. Well, Mr. Cooper came out recently, and I thought he was very reasonable. He says, listen, this woman lost her job, she lost her friends, she lost her reputation, she's been punished enough. I am not going to cooperate with the district attorney's office in the prosecution of her. Now, first of all, there's a couple of elements there that are great lessons for us. Number one, he is being forgiving. He's being understanding. He's being reasonable. And he's a cooler head in the crowd, saying, why do we have to amp this up even further? The woman lost her job. Pretty big penalty for saying something stupid and inappropriate, right? So kudos to Mr. Cooper as being an example for all of us on being forgiving and for being reasonable as we go forward. That's what we're going to need to get out of this. Now, a couple other things that I had on my list here. The violence in New York City is really getting out of control. The mayor can't handle it. Other major cities are seeing this rise. We're going to have to find a way to stem this tide of violence, because, you know, cutting our police officers and removing them from the force is not going to do it. So along those lines, one of the things that I have for us here is a little inspirational kind of a thing for a couple of minutes I want to talk about. There's a religious leader, Catholic leader, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vignano, if I'm saying that, Vignano maybe. And he made some headlines when he wrote some supportive things about the United States, and he recently wrote a prayer for the United States of America. And it's really a beautiful prayer. He understands the value America has to the world, and he sees the conflict we are in now. And he wrote this really beautiful prayer. I'm not going to read it to you, but you can go look it up. His last name is Vignano, the Archbishop. Google his name or go out and do a search of his name, and you'll find him. You'll come across him. You know, but the prayer is, Almighty and eternal God, King of kings and Lord of lords, graciously turn your gaze unto all who invoke you with confidence, is how it starts. And then he talks about the United States and praying for us here in the United States. It's important that we do pray, for help, because this can quickly spin out of control, and I think the Archbishop's prayer is really wonderful. There's a couple of lines in here. Like I said, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but as I look for it, you know, he's praying for bless the President of the United States, so that aware of his responsibility and his duties, he may be a knight of justice, defender of the oppressed, a firm bulwark against your enemies, and a proud supporter of the children of light. Pretty impressive wording to use for the President of the United States. Now, here's someone who's standing up for the United States. And the last line of here is, place the United States of America and the whole world under the mantle of the Queen of Victories, our unconquered leader in battle, the Immaculate Conception. It is thanks to her and through your mercy that the hymn of praise rises to you, O Lord, from the children from whom you have redeemed in the most precious blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Now, whether you are religious or not, whether you are Catholic or not, doesn't matter your faith. The man's words are the example we need to look at. He's reaching out to God to ask for some help here, because obviously us humans are not doing such a very good job of it. It's only going to amp up as we get closer to this election, and I think the Archbishop's prayer is a great value to all of us, no matter where you stand on religion. He is a cooler head trying to prevail in all of this chaos. So I would suggest you go find that prayer and read it, and do a little praying yourself. All right, so will cooler heads prevail? I don't know. I'm certainly hoping so, because we need that to happen. Because if not, we're on a dark road. And I'm not a dark road kind of guy. I'm a light and fun kind of guy, and I want America to be a great place for everyone. No matter your race, your creed, your religion, your color, it doesn't matter. America is the promise of freedom and liberty, and in there is where humanity thrives and grows and reaches its greatest potential. So we'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice with some treats for everybody that you probably haven't heard from in a while.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And like I said, I had something special for you today because we're trying to, you know, lighten it up a little. Our theme of, you know, can cooler heads prevail? Means we all have to take a deep breath. We have to relax a little bit. We have to sit back, take it all in, all right, instead of being so amped up and so crazy. So I thought one of the best ways we could do that would be to reach out to Joe Pangaro Jr., the attorney of record here at Chasing Justice. Joe, how are you?
Hey, Dad, it's great to be here. I always enjoy these segments, and I'm looking forward to another fun one.
That's excellent. So, Joe, one of the things that we talk about here is disorder in the court, which is pretty funny because our system of laws and rules are codified. You know, they're written down. They tell us how we have to do things, what we have to do. Legislatures write law. The executive signs the law into action, and there we go. Now we all follow the law, and everything works out great. Unfortunately, some of these laws are old. They're antiquated. They're out of place, and when we look at them through the lens of today, sometimes they can look absolutely absurd, whether they're old or not. So do you have anything along that line for any crazy court cases or funny court cases that are going on?
Yeah, sure. So a good one that I found recently was, courts have been shut down, just so everyone knows. Courts have been shut down because of coronavirus for several months now. And, when it was a two-week shutdown or a three-week shutdown or even a month, everyone was content to just push pause outside of serious emergencies. But now that it's gone on for months and months and months, courts are trying to get back up and running as well. And so what a lot of them are doing is they're actually having full trials or at least hearings on Zoom. So now you've got all these judges, these old fuddy-duddy judges in many cases, trying to figure out Zoom and so they can conduct hearings from remote locations. And in Florida, of course, this happened in Florida. The judges in one district in Florida actually had to issue a warning to all of the attorneys in the county because they were inappropriate on Zoom. So this is a direct quote from them. It says, "One comment that needs sharing is the judges would appreciate if the lawyers keep in mind these are hearings. It is remarkable how many attorneys appear inappropriately on camera. And we've seen lawyers in casual shirts, no concern for ill grooming, in bedrooms with the master bed and background. One lawyer appeared shirtless, and one female attorney appeared still in bed under the covers for the hearing."
that's pretty good.
Yeah, and so what we've seen is, a lot of lawyers, I guess, have not adjusted to Zoom either and didn't quite realize that the camera on your laptop is fully functional. And so if you are conducting the hearing at home, it does not mean you can conduct the hearing in your pajama pants.
That's great. Now, it's funny, with all the training and the teaching that I do, Zoom has become the model for everybody. Zoom and other platforms too, there's lots of them out there. Lots of companies use different ones, but we do see that a lot. Even in our meetings, we're using a specific platform for our company so that we can have these visual meetings with each other from the distance. And kids come walking through, and they're ripping off their diapers, or you got the husband or the wife in the background changing, and you're like, "Do you realize you're on camera here? This is kind of crazy stuff." So it is pretty funny. It's a different world, different paradigm that we're in right now. But you would think lawyers would do the right thing, though.
Yeah, I think one of the senior partners who I shared this with when I saw the notice, he said, the only change that you should be allowing yourself for a Zoom hearing versus a court hearing is you don't have to wear dress shoes. If you're, he's like, you should still be in a full suit. He goes, that should be the extent of it. Going shirtless, that's a little bit too casual for the courtroom.
Yes, it certainly is. That would never fly in the courtroom.
Yeah, and we got one more that we saw a lot of at the beginning. This was from the Northern District of Illinois, so it was a trademark case. And what you'll see in a lot of trademark cases is that they won't just if a company thinks their trademark's being infringed on, they won't just file a lawsuit. They'll also go after what's called a preliminary injunction, and you'll see a lot of those in the news. Those are in the press all the time, and this is a political show, so in that context, President Trump signed whatever order, and the court stopped it by issuing a preliminary injunction. So people might have heard that phrase before, and really what it's used for in the trademark sense is an emergency situation where your business's trademark is being used by a different company that could impact consumers' view of your company. So I'll just pick, you sell Joe Pangaro soda, and then, Harry Johnson comes along, he slaps, your label on his worse soda, somebody buys it thinking that it's yours, and now they don't like your soda anymore. Well, that kind of a context.
That would be terrible.
And so we'll see in these trademark cases, that's the standard, is you file for a preliminary injunction and you say it's an emergency. Well, these guys, I guess, didn't get the memo that the definition of emergency has changed a little bit. And you can tell how the court feels about it. They open up their case by dismissing a preliminary injunction motion. They say, this case involves counterfeit unicorn drawings while the world is in the midst of a global pandemic. And you just know how the court feels about this. You brought us into court in the middle of a pandemic for an emergency over unicorn drawings. And the line at the end, I think, is pretty damning, which is why, especially for federal court, he says, half the practice of a decent lawyer is telling their clients they are damned fools and they should shut up. The world is facing a real emergency. The plaintiff is not.
That's pretty good. You see that kind of thing a lot. You see these lawsuits and you're like, are you kidding? Who would bring that to court? But I guess there's settlements, people settle. So what the heck, it doesn't cost you anything to get an attorney to go in and file. But that's great that a judge would say that. Excuse me, has anybody noticed we're in a pandemic and you're an idiot talking about unicorns?
Yeah. And then I'll just give you one last one, because I know you had asked, we talked about some of the laws. I always have fun finding these laws for you. I tracked this down. Chapter 21 of the U.S. Code. This is what our elected leaders are running on, ladies and gentlemen. Section 137B1 makes it a federal crime for an egg handler to wear perfume around the eggs. I just imagine, how do you enforce that? Do you have a security guard at the entrance of the egg handling facility just sniffing everyone as they come in to determine whether or not there's perfume or cologne? I got to imagine that's some type of a workplace violation. You do workplace security. You can't have a sniffer at the door. So how do you even enforce this?
Well, I'll tell you, that's pretty funny. The idea of somebody standing, and then, what if it's body odor and it's not the eau de cologne, as they say. But we would have thought previous to this pandemic that impossible, nobody would ever do that. Look what we do now, though. When you walk into places, if you don't have a mask, they throw you out. If you have a cough, they're taking your temperature. Next thing you know, they're going to be giving you all kinds of exams to see if you're okay. So I could see.
That's actually.
May I sniff you, sir? I could see that happening. Kind of absurd.
You know what? That's a really good point. That maybe these legislators were visionaries in a way I'm not giving them credit for. That they tried to protect the eggs from the dangers, the scourge of perfume in the building. But nowadays, there's a lot of workplace safety measures that are out there that I never would have thought we'd have seen before. So. Who knows that, a designated workplace perfume smeller, that's not as crazy as it was 5 months ago.
No, it's not. And I'll tell you though, interesting. We see the funny part of a guy or a girl standing there, leaning over to sniff everyone to determine whether or not they have perfume so they don't damage the eggs. But in reality, technology has really stepped into the void here, especially with all these new rules. I know one of the companies that I'm associated with, they have a temperature reader, I suppose you call it. When you walk into the room, there's a camera attached to it, and it looks like a little an iPad type of a screen. And as soon as you walk in within range of the camera, a circle appears on the screen, and you're supposed to stick your face into that circle, by looking at the screen. The first thing it does, it runs a scan and tells you if you have a mask or not. Says no mask, no admittance.
Whoa.
If you do have a mask, it goes to the next thing and it reads your temperature, and then it prints out the temperature on the screen. And if you're below, I guess, whatever the boundary line is, 99 point whatever, it says you can be admitted or you can't, and it allows the unlocking system on the doors to accept your swipe card so you can go in. So I could certainly imagine with some of the other technologies they have. They have this this sensor that detects vaping, and it detects vape with THC. Well, perfume, as absurd as that sounds, is really just another conglomeration of chemicals and things that could be sensed. So while we think it's funny that you would have somebody standing there sniffing everyone, sticking their nose in everybody's business, so to speak, you could certainly have a sensor there that says, you know, walk through this sensor area and we'll tell you whether or not you smell appropriate to get into the building.
It's a brave new world, I guess, is a way to put it. And if you'll indulge me just one more here, because I know people want a break from some of all the seriousness. I found one more just even as we were talking that is just too good to pass up. So Section 9 of the Code of Federal Regulations, 319.306, and this is near and dear to my heart as a New Jersey resident. Makes it a federal crime. To sell spaghetti and meatballs and sauce without prominently declaring the presence of the sauce. So if you sell a packet of spaghetti and meatballs with sauce and you don't say with sauce on there, jackbooted thugs could be kicking down your door and hauling you off to the pokey.
Now, you wonder where these things come from. You know, how did some legislature obviously say, okay, well, this is a problem. Maybe there was two spaghetti companies fighting it out and one never said anything about the sauce. I don't know. It actually had to come to some, you know, how hard it is to make a law. I can't imagine where a lot of these things came from, but I guess, you know, you're involved in that with businesses trying to get one up on each other and get ahead of each other that, hey, they don't mention they have sauce. They shouldn't be able to sell their spaghetti and meatballs.
In my mind, it's one of those things that some senator brought home dinner for the family and it either had sauce and it wasn't supposed to, or it didn't have sauce and it was, and he got yelled at and he said, darn it, I'm never going to let this happen again. This is where I bring justice to the world.
Right. Good use of your time, Senator, worrying about spaghetti and meatballs and if somebody sniffs into the eggs. Well, Joe, those are good because you're right. Things are kind of crazy out there. And, you know, our theme today here on Chasing Justice is, you know, cooler heads. And sometimes it takes a cooler head to relax, laugh a little bit, listen to some things that's not this constant political violence thing that's going on every single minute. Along that line, let's, continue, but let's turn the heat up a little. I'm going to ask you a little bit about something that's going on in the world. We saw that General Flynn was charged with lying to the FBI. He apparently pled guilty, and he was going to be sentenced. And recently, we saw that Attorney General William Barr doing an investigation into the entire situation that was, you know, the Mueller investigation and all that, of which the general got caught up in. Turned out that there was a lot of apparent prosecutorial misconduct, and that the general might have been pressured into pleading guilty, which we know does happen in some court cases. And the attorney general said, listen, there's no reason for this man to be prosecuted. We want to dismiss the charges. And then the sitting judge on the case, who has demonstrated a couple of times he's kind of a political guy, he refused to do it. He even went out and requested a friend of the court brief, an amicus brief, for another prosecutor to come in and determine whether or not the charges should be dropped. Now, I know the Supreme Court recently had a case where they said these amicus briefs in these type of criminal cases really shouldn't take place, but he did it anyway. So what really happens when a prosecutor tells the court, okay, we change our mind, we don't want a prosecutor, something went wrong here, and it's not a justice to continue with the case. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, and I think this is a really interesting point where context, I think, could be very helpful to people. So I don't do criminal law a lot, so I'll put that disclosure up front. But I have looked into this, and there's a really special context that people need to keep in mind. So there is a rule that says the prosecutor cannot withdraw the case without the leave of court. Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, I think it's 48. But the context is that's not designed for any other reason except to protect the defendant. So here's the situation. Prosecutor wants to put on a case. He thinks he's got this defendant dead to rights. Well, he gets everything going. He gets the case in front of a jury, and it turns out that the defense attorney is great and is making him look like a buffoon. Well, if he kicks the case all the way to the jury and the jury rules on the case and finds the guy not guilty, double jeopardy will protect him. You can never charge that guy again. So you might have a prosecutor that says, you know what, I'm going to withdraw the charges, drop the trial, dismiss the case, withdraw the charges. They wipe the slate clean, and then he files another case against the guy for the same crime the next day. So Rule 48 is designed to prevent a prosecutor from ever doing that. If you're going to withdraw a case, you need the permission of the court, but that's designed to protect the defendant so the judge can make sure you're not just withdrawing the case because you're losing and you don't want to get a loss and you don't want to start, you're not going to start this over. It's not a do-over. But in this case, General Flynn, the withdrawal was a dismissal with prejudice, which means the prosecutor is saying, we want to get rid of the case and we'll never bring it again. And so on the rules, this is the purpose of the rule, is to protect the defendant from multiple trials. That's what the prosecutor is trying to do. And it just seems like the judge is relying on that rule and trying to push it as far as he possibly can to the extent of the rule. And there's just not a lot of case law out there because no one's ever really treated it like this before, where the judge can make these kind of decisions. It's always been just to protect the defendant. So in this case, just to protect General Flynn, the trial started, looks like General Flynn is winning. Let's withdraw the case and we'll refile against him. We'll start this over tomorrow and we'll try again. That's what they're trying to stop.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I didn't think of it from the point of protecting the defendant, but I suppose, you know, I guess egos do get involved in these things. You know, a prosecutor has a high profile case. They want to win and it looks like, something we didn't think about. The defense attorney did a great job. I think we're losing this. Let's get rid of this jury who's about to vote not guilty, get rid of the whole thing, and then charge the guy again. That would inherently be unfair and unjust to me. You take your shot, no matter what side you are, you take your shot with your justice as best as you can. You prosecute, you win or you lose. So very interesting. Right. Joe, thank you very much for being on here with us today. You know, it's always great when you come on with your disorder in the court, and you know, be healthy, be safe out there, and we'll catch up with you again soon. Thanks.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Listen, I appreciate everybody who likes the show and pays attention to the show and sends me emails and follows me on the Twitter. So if you'd like to do that, you can follow us here at Pangaro Global, at Pangaro Global. And we'd love to hear from you, some ideas of what you're thinking about the world, what you think about the show, what you'd like us to talk about in the future. So I appreciate all of you being out there. So as we go forward, you know, in the first part of the show, I talked about Mr. Christian Cooper and Michael Jordan, and I appreciated their being part of the solution, not a part of the problem, by trying to bring us together in words and what it is we can do. So one of the things that I had talked about a few weeks ago that I kind of want to update everybody on, my friend Lieutenant George Corbin from the Asbury Park Police Department. George is retired, like I am. We worked together a lot back in the day. Our towns were next to each other. George is an African-American gentleman, and he is very, very active in his community and trying to do the right thing. He was also in school safety and security, and he's just a really great guy. So George and I are trying to work together on a program to bring law enforcement together with our community. Now, this is no simple thing to do, but since George and I come from the world of law enforcement, and we care about our communities, and we care about our nation, we decided to put this program together. And what we're calling it is This Moment in Time. And it's really to take advantage of this moment in time in the middle of this chaos and this craziness and all the stuff that's going on. Because the reality is, all of this is going to end one way or another. If it ends positively and we do find a way to improve law enforcement services and the relationship between our law enforcement communities and our communities that we serve, and it ends up being a safer, more secure place, and we appreciate our cops and we appreciate law enforcement, we support them, we will have a much better society and we will all get along better. If it goes the other way, we are looking at chaos, we are looking at problems, we are looking at a change in our national model of how we get along and how our country functions, and probably in the style of government we have. So I wanted to tell you about that, and because George and I are thinking of calling anything that we do that comes out of it the Blue Heart. You know, blue for law enforcement and a heart, because a heart is where we all live. A heart is where our integrity lives. Our heart is where our courage lives. Our heart is where our love lives. And our heart is where God lives. You know, so the Blue Heart will be our concept going forward as we create this moment in time training program. So we're probably going to do, you know, pieces on it here and there. I'll talk about it here on Chasing Justice because it is really a vehicle for pursuing justice, a bigger justice in our entire country. And I just kind of wanted to update everybody on that. Well, before you know it, we're going to have a Facebook page for it probably, and you can pop on there and take a look at it and, you know, help us. Help us to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, like we say here on Chasing Justice all the time. So going forward, the acts of forgiveness. Now, recently I had an opportunity to talk to Bill, the man of faith, Dallas, from the neighborhood. Now, Bill has been stuck in quarantine for quite a while, as most of us are, and the world's starting to open up again. So I was talking to Bill and saying, from a religious perspective, you know, where is the value of cooler heads prevailing? You know, what does God say about cooler heads prevailing? And Bill was saying, you know, really, what God is about is love and peace and justice and tranquility among all his children. So cooler heads, if they can prevail, they'll be able to speak. They'll be able to listen to each other. They'll be able to converse. They'll be able to work out problems and figure out what we need to do going forward. So really, that is a God type of perspective about peace and justice. And it's extremely important for all of us to get on board with that. So that's why I'm doing those programs. That's why I reached out to Bill. I wanted to get his idea. Now, I did, in honor of Bill, who always brings us all kinds of different quotes. You know, Bill's a quote guy. He likes to go find a good quote to help fill out a thought he's having. I found one from Winston Churchill, when Winston Churchill was talking about appeasing, at the time, Adolf Hitler and the Nazis as they were getting stronger and their voices were getting louder and their threatening was getting louder and more prevalent. And people were urging him to appease this evil that was growing. And, you know, we know that appeasement very, very rarely works. All right. So Winston Churchill, who was a man of great quotes and great ideas, and he came out and he says, well, appeasing an evil person or an evil government or something like that basically is like feeding the crocodile so that he will eat you last. You might put it off, but if the person has evil or bad intent, they're eventually going to run out of other things to eat and they're going to eat you anyway. That's the essence of what he was saying. When you feed the alligator hoping that it eats you last, that is kind of what appeasing people who are demanding violence and attacking the institutions of America and trying to bring it down, because that's kind of where this is right now. And I take that back. It's not kind of where it is. It is where it is. It is this moment in time when we are seeing outside groups that are using this moment in our American history to attack everything that they dislike, that they don't care about for our country. In their process, they're using the strife and the concerns of most Americans about how our law enforcement community is viewed by and interacts with all the communities that they serve. Now, I say that viewed by because I'm not in every community. I'm only in my community. So I know how my community views law enforcement. I know how my community sees the role and place of police. So I certainly can understand that not every community would feel served very well by law enforcement. I've said it till I'm blue in the face. If every time my sons left the house, they were stopped and pulled over, I'd be frustrated. So that's an experience that a lot of people have that I don't have. When I was talking to George Corbin today, Lieutenant George Corbin, and we were going over some of the opening topics of what we're going to talk about in our program, he said he had been personally the officer who was called to the scene when someone requested police service, and he showed up, and he says he got there, and the person said, listen, I don't want a black officer. I want a white officer. And I'm trying to remember if anything like that ever happened to me. Not early on in my career, but there were certain times when I was dealing with people that they wanted to talk to someone who was of their own race, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, do you have an Italian cop? Do you have a Spanish cop? Do you have an Irish cop? I want to talk to them. Because people feel close to their own community. And I guess they would feel they would get a better shake. Which is really one of the reasons that we went out as a law enforcement community and tried to increase the participation in law enforcement of people of all different backgrounds. You know, you heard me talk about this several times. The more backgrounds we have involved in law enforcement, the better off we are because we bring in all these different perspectives. Now, I don't think it's necessary to have an officer of your own race only be the one you deal with. Because I've seen good cops of every race. And if they're a good cop, they're a good cop. It doesn't matter what their background is. That being said, I could see where people on the other side who say, nobody understands me but an Italian cop and understands how I grew up. Right now, I'm saying that because I'm Italian. So that's why I'm using that connection. But you could spread that out to anybody else of any other race. Listen, hey, I'm a Catholic, man. I only want to talk to a Catholic cop because that's the only one who will understand me and what I did and why I did it. So we have to understand that perception. So if the perception is that your community does not get a fair shake from law enforcement, we have to consider how do we overcome that? You know, what is the way to overcome that? Well, I think a fair and honest media, if they went out and reported, like, see, the whole idea of a reporter is that somebody says something, hey, you know what? The sky is orange. Okay, so then a newspaper reporter should ask a few questions. Gee, sir, why do you think the sky is orange? Have you seen the sky be orange? Where can I go to see the orange sky? Then the reporter should do some background investigation. Do some research. Has the sky ever been seen to be orange instead of blue? When would that be? What circumstances would that happen? How many times has the sky actually been orange and not blue? Then you write all the stuff down and you report. We got a report from a man today who says the sky is orange. Well, we did some research and we found that indeed, one time in December of 1947, the sky was seen to be orange. And the reason was, whatever the reason would be, we don't see honest reporting today. So when people go out and they make comments about the horrific things that law enforcement does, and they make it sound like that is the norm, as opposed to the limited instances when our law enforcement officers get involved in something they shouldn't or do something wrong. And of course that happens. They're human beings, right? But when they make it sound like the exception is the rule, then people's perceptions change. And that's where we start to get this entire mess of the cops are bad. The cops are out to get everybody. The cops they hate minorities. The cops will do anything they can to shoot a minority. And that's not real. And a reporter should ask some questions. Like, here's some questions I would ask any reporters. What actually is the murder rate of law enforcement officers in general? Who does the killing? Under what circumstances does this happen? And then look at it the other way. Of the people that the police have killed, what is the actual circumstance of that? Not just they killed this guy or they killed that woman. What led up to that? Okay, because a lot of times there are reasons that things happen. Admittedly, sometimes they are mistakes. Sometimes they are poor judgment. Sometimes there's bias involved. If we don't admit that, we're losing our minds. But that is this small, small, tiny percentage of things that happen. In most cases, something happened that led to the interaction between the officer and the person, and then something expanded during that that interaction that led to violence. When it was a mistake, okay, horrible. Are people responsible for mistakes? Yes, they are. Sometimes they did it because they had bad judgment. The officer thought they saw a weapon and didn't take enough time to see that it wasn't a weapon. Now, how much time are you supposed to take? How much time are you supposed to take before you get shot? You know, what do we want to tell our cops? You have to make positive that it is a gun by them shooting at you before you can return fire. Well, some people would say that that's what you should do. I think that's foolish. We do not hire officers to go out there and die or take a beating. We give them the power to make judgment, and we hopefully train them appropriately. Now, I had an instance I had told you about, and I had more than one instance like this, where I was very, very grateful that I had had enough time on the job and enough experience with chaotic and crazy situations that I didn't overreact. A piece of it was training, a piece of it was experience, and a piece of it was luck, just the way it worked out. So one time, there's an operation in narcotics work that's called a RIP. So what you do is you have an informant, someone who's in trouble, and they're trying to help themselves by helping the police with an investigation. And that informant says, I can order up from a drug dealer X amount of drugs, and they will deliver them to me wherever I am. Now, the idea is you listen into this phone conversation, and the informant talks to the drug dealer. Hey, can you bring me 2 pounds of weed and 500 ecstasy pills and, I don't know, an ounce of heroin? And the drug dealer agrees and says they will show up at a certain place at a certain time in a certain vehicle to deliver those drugs. So basically, the officer listened into a conspiracy, right? Two people agreed, the beginning of a conspiracy, they agreed to commit a drug deal, which is illegal, sell illegal narcotics. Then you go out and conduct your surveillance at the location where the person said they were going to show up. If when you're there, at the time the drug dealer said they would show up, and they arrive at that location in that vehicle, the officer can make a judgment that this person is here to sell narcotics because the officer heard the conversation where the agreement was made. That's the beginning of the conspiracy. A conspiracy is completed when someone takes actual steps to enforce that conspiracy. In this case, the concept was, hey, bring me drugs. Yes, I will. I'll come at this date and time in this vehicle. Now seeing the completion of that conspiracy is when that vehicle shows up. Now the officers, what they do is they run up on that vehicle. They remove the driver and the occupants, and they search the vehicle looking for the drugs because they believe a crime has committed. Person agreed to bring drugs. They didn't know they were being listened to by the cops, and they showed up at that place in that time in that vehicle. Common sense would tell you they came there to bring the drugs. And the officers find the drugs, and you arrest the people that are there. Well, that's the background. We were conducting a RIP of a known drug dealer who was selling large, large amounts of drugs, heroin especially, and there was a lot of overdoses related to the drugs this person was selling. So the community was up in arms. They wanted us to do something. So we had an informant who was looking to help themselves. The informant says, hey, I can buy from Mr. X. Mr. X is the drug dealer that we were trying to investigate. We said, perfect. We listened in. They agreed to bring a large amount of drugs to a certain location at a certain time in a certain vehicle. And we set up our surveillance. Well, here comes the vehicle. Here comes Mr. X at the time and the place in the vehicle. I pulled my police car up, my undercover car, to block him in so he couldn't drive away. Another car pulled in behind him so he couldn't leave. So we don't want a foot chase or a car chase because that's dangerous. So you try and cut those things off. I stepped out of my police car. I had a big shirt on that said police in big letters, and I had a badge hanging around my neck. There was no doubt who I was to, I would say, 99.9% of the whole civilian world would see me and go, well, that's a cop. That's a law enforcement officer. And then I put myself in a very tactically inappropriate position. I wanted the driver to see me because I wanted him to know the police are here. You can't get away to just surrender. I wanted it to go peacefully. I didn't want to want a problem. We wanted to make the arrest and get the drugs off the street. And I stood between my police car and the narcotic suspect's vehicle. And at that point, the suspect looked at me. He saw me. I know he read my shirt because I saw his eyes gaze down. And he grabbed the gear shift of the car. And my concern was that he was going to put it in drive and he was going to crush me against my car to get away. That's what I saw, and that's what I knew was going to happen. So I drew my service weapon. I pointed it at him. I told him, freeze, don't move, don't move. And he went to put the car in drive. He started to move the handle. And I said, don't do it, don't do it. And I focused even closer, and I leaned forward to take the shot. And the man saw that, and he realized I was probably going to shoot. And he took his hand off the gear shift, and he surrendered. Now, we arrested him. We found lots of drugs in his car. When I got back, I interviewed him. I said, what were you doing? He says, I didn't think you would really shoot. I was scared to death. I didn't want to go back to jail. I was going to crash into you to get away. And then I saw all those other cops, and I realized you probably would shoot me. And that's why I surrendered. To this very day, I am so grateful to all the facts, the way they worked out, that I did not have to shoot. I do not want to shoot anybody. I never wanted to shoot anybody. And I can't tell you I've ever met a cop that says, I want to shoot somebody. Nobody does. So that worked out. But in that instance, with his hand on a gear shift, if he put it in gear and I shot him, the guy was unarmed, except for the fact he had a vehicle that I thought he was going to run me over and kill me with. And I had a legal right to be where I was to arrest him. I didn't have to back down. It's law enforcement. So we have to tell the true stories of what's going on out there. So it would be great. It would be awesome if our papers, our media would investigate and find out what is the truth about law enforcement interaction with people and people getting arrested and resisting and the violence that goes on, and tell the truth no matter which way it comes out. Do a real investigation. Give people real information so that we don't have this conflict that's going on for nothing. Our communities need our police. Our police need our communities. We all need to be one. So thank you for listening. We'll see you soon again. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangara for Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.